football on off the ball.
Toby, I'm just a bit standoffish, to be honest, and I just said that to the lads in the dressing room. We're getting too much respect. And for me, on a football pitch, when you give teams too much respect, it's a fear. Yeah, didn't like it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Right, we shall see what the attendance is at Croke Park this afternoon as well. 28,000, just under, I think, was the official attendance last year for the Cork-Galway Camogie final, and obviously the other grades that happened before that, and there will be a repeat today, and plenty of coverage of the games across the papers today. I think we decided we were going to hone in, initially at least, on the Mark Gallagher piece in the Mail on Sunday, and last week we were chatting about the Heatherton dynasty with all the connections there in Dublin. This week it's the Cathalans and... by association, the Clearys of Castlehaven. So you have the Cork captain, Maeve, and then her sister, Orla, who'll play corner forward today, and then sister, Grania, who's out injured at the minute. Brother, Damien, who obviously played in the All-Ireland hurling final a few weeks ago. Dad, Niall Cathalan, as if it needs saying, Cork football legend. Mother, Eilish, sister of Nullig, who is more Cork football royalty. Bear with me. Only the 9 All-Ireland football medals for Nullig, of course, one of the all-time greats on that great team of the 2000s and beyond. And Uncle John Cleary, who you will know is the current county football manager for the men. So we decided we'd discuss football dynasties, and sure, look who we have in front of us. But there's
a few more All-Ireland medals in that.
Well, there is. In most houses, to be fair. But that bit of like... You often see that thing where you have brothers who achieve, you know, at a really high level, or dads who've achieved. Is there a bit of it, and you're uniquely enough placed to answer this to both of you, a bit of it having seen, you know, around the house that this stuff can be achieved, you know, as opposed to plenty of other houses where there isn't somebody that you can look at and go, you know, this thing is within grasp. Most people... I don't mind saying the house that I grew up. My dad did play minor county football for Longford at a certain point. But there is that bit of like, geez, that thing is beyond me. Whereas that wasn't your experience.
Yeah, it's probably normalised to an extent. Like, I would have grown up and you'd have heard a lot of stories of kind of like the 80s, 90s. Me, so I was born in 94. So kind of vague memories of 99 and even the loss in 2001. But you would have kind of grown up around stories of it, and my dad kept playing football up till he won a county medal at 40 with Dunboyne. So you were just always around this, and even like playing senior club football in Dunboyne was so normalised. I was up at every training. You'd meet, you know, if you're out and about, you'd meet, you know, current or past county players. So just being in those circles, I think, was quite normalised. Like, dad was on a panel in 88 when they won. Jerry obviously played a lot.
Jerry is like more royalty, obviously.
Yeah.
Big part of that Sean Boylan years.
Yeah. He'd have, whatever, he started in the well, actually, ironically enough, I think he got sent off for a confrontation with Niall Cathalan in one of those finals. So this is all piecing together nicely. It's just normalised. And I suppose, like, I'd be interested to get... Simon's taking a minute, kind of going a different sport, but like the big thing I would have found growing up was if I went to meet under 14 trials or even playing a game against another 10, someone heard your surname, they go, oh, which of them is you? Like, there was whatever, 7 brothers. So 7 brothers and 1 sister in my dad's family. So it kind of meant you always, I thought it probably gave you an eye, like say a trial, someone would keep an eye on your man, oh well, he's a McIntyre, I wonder is he any good because Andy and Jerry and whatever else. But then there was probably a heightened sense of expectation on top of it too. So there was good and bad to it, like, but definitely normalised playing at that level.
If I continue to do this thing, there's a path here for me.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And obviously there's lots of good advice and steers and some welcome and some not so welcome truths and advice along the way. But I would have thought the pros very much outweighed the cons of maybe a little bit of extra pressure. But the big thing, as I probably said a few times now, is just that normalising. It's not a mystery about playing at that level, I suppose.
I would absolutely, the normalisation is a definite part of it. I would say, you know, my family all went different sporting directions. I know you work with Elizabeth and she's gone down the triathlon route, myself tennis, my sister Vicky in football, and my brother in golf. But I think one of the kind of overriding high level factors is the standards.
Yeah.
I think from a young age, and you know, growing up playing all sports, I think the standards you hold yourself to and you're held to from your parents or from, you know, outside family, I think that's an important part. And I think the same as yourself, you know, my dad being involved in management and teams, and you're always around dress rooms, you're kicking ball around and you're always surrounded by it. I think that side of things, you know, it really creates that want for yourself to achieve. And I think being around that all the time, you're looking at examples constantly. Yeah. And you're constantly looking at examples of people who are achieving highly. And like you see it in a lot of sports, you know, from my sport in particular, you've got the Korda family, who's, you know, Nelly Korda's number one in the world. Sebi Korda, who I played juniors with, is 20 in the world, and his dad won the Australian Open. And I think his mum was top 30 as well. So, like, there's definitely a common denominator. You've got the Williams sisters in these sporting families, and the Cahillans are no different by the looks of things.
Yeah, we're trying to figure a way to tie in the Jameses of LeBron fame and you know, the Cordas and the Williams, yeah, the Cahillans. Have you ever seen that Robin Van Persie clip? I'm going to butcher the story now, but he talks about he's at son's training.
Yeah.
And the son, maybe it might have been a match and the son didn't play, whatever it was, and he's coming back and he's given out about the coach and the journey the way back, and Robin Van Persie says to him, I'm dramatising it here, but it was some version of, you're a loser. And he was like, what? And he was like, with that mentality, you're coming back, you're in the car, blaming the coach. What could you have done better to, you know, better yourself or whatever? I just thought it was a really instructive thing. He, I'm sure, didn't word it as harshly as that, but there was a bit of sort of home truths that maybe another parent would have either maybe gone over the top with, like, you know, uneducated sort of advice, or been too sort of soft on it, but that was kind of felt like a good thread. What was your experience of that?
Yeah, I mean, the standards bit you're talking about there, like little things I would have been exposed to quite young. Like if I went, dad would have been involved in a lot of the teams I was involved with, even like soccer, whatever was competitive, he kind of wanted to be involved with, and probably was probably thinking he could shape a few of the younger Des Moines lads playing soccer for football in the future. Yeah. But either way, either way, he was involved, and a few like really clear memories. One, he would have taken out of the trainings and he wasn't around one night, and really nice man, was running the training in his place, and a few of us just started messing. We were probably 10 or 11. We just started messing for the whole night, like, and didn't really give. And I got some pretty strong words on it, but it wasn't, and so it was about kind of like respect and I suppose discipline and the standards like that you're kind of wasting your time, wasting everybody else's time, that maybe another parent who wasn't in that sort of, I'm not going to say elite sport, but serious sport mindset would appreciate, you know, like they'd kind of say, oh, they're having fun with their friends and sure, what's the harm?
Word had got back to him that you were actually golden.
Similar, the one time I was called into the we had a brilliant principal in primary school, huge football man from Mayo, a guy called Willie Lyons, and he'd actually coached the adult team in Des Moines. So he knew my dad from before I went to the school, and a similar sort of setting happened when I hadn't been picked on a certain team, so a few others were sent to training. And again, I'm painting a bad picture of myself again today. I was just messing with one of the lads, and I was a fairly, like, I don't know, nondescript fella in primary school, no trouble. But I got brought into the office that day and told, you used to go home and tell your dad about this because he'd be disgusted with you. The same principal told me once after a game in fifth class, so I'd say I was 10, to hype me up for the second round game. He said, if your uncle hadn't been at the first round game, he'd have walked away with his head in his hands, ashamed of you.
Oh, Jesus.
And I think about it, this probably isn't really...
It wouldn't pass 2025.
No, I don't think so. But I remember, and I remember thinking, okay, well, I wouldn't want my uncle to be ashamed of me, I'm going to try and play better today. So yeah, definitely, like, going back to the first bit, like that kind of, I know the exactly what you're talking about with Van Persie. I got a lot of hard truths like that when I was younger, but they were fair and they were in. Yeah. And then it got to an age where it was like, I'd say maybe 13 or 14, I started to show a little bit, and I was like, if you want to be serious about it, be serious about it, and I'll give you all this. Mm. Or if you want to just be fun and whatever else, it'll be fun, but you won't progress with it, but I won't put that in.
I definitely do think growing up with it, and like those formative years of 4, 5, 6, you know, growing up with elite sport or high level sport in your family, I think there's a certain level expected of you if you're participating. Mm. I think as you're, you know, in those formative years, that's bedded into you a little bit, and then you grow up through it. And then personally, I'm super competitive, and I always have been. And I think that's probably embedded in it in those years, not just, you know, as the older you grow and the more competitive you get at things, you might have some genetical capabilities that are probably passed down. But I think in general, just being surrounded by high performance kind of breeds that into you from a young age.
Did you find a difference that it wasn't your dad's sport that you were?
No, I you know, I played GA growing up as well. Yeah, it didn't really matter what the sport was, to be honest. It was the same as what you just said. Like, if you're willing to put it in, if you're willing to take it seriously, like, I left school at 15. Like, that's a huge decision, not just for me, but for my parents to make. I don't know what I'm doing at 15. Like, they're taking on a huge risk there. And the conversation was always around. I think they knew in me that I wasn't going to mess around or you know, not put 100% in, because that wasn't my style. And yeah, the one, you know, lesson was, or the one non-negotiable was, you know, you put it all in and we'll do everything, you know, to facilitate what your goals and dreams are.
I'm just taking notes here for my own 8-year-old, 6-year-old and 3-year-old at home who's going to hurling mad.
Tape a racket tape a hurl to his hand.
Is that the way? The youngest fella particularly needs no taping. He's obsessed with the thing. He's a prodigy. I've mentioned that yet, but no pressure. So yeah, that piece is really good. And I always, like, my benchmark at the Sunday papers is about, like, have I read something that makes me more interested in the sport that's happening that day or upcoming? And definitely that profile of Maeve Cahillan and her family, as you can tell, a dynasty, will help you do that. On the previous page in the Mail on Sunday as well, Shane McGrath, we watch when it's good, not because we should. And for anybody who's been paying any attention, I think, to the Camogie build-up this week, you'll be familiar with this one. Brian Malloy, the Camogie Association president, has called on everyone from the participating counties of the 6 counties involved today and anyone involved in Camogie in all the counties around the country to turn out today. I think the overriding feeling being that, like, it's not the most egregious thing to say, but Sarah Donovan was on with us during the week, and she was saying that there has to be more to it than just this sort of 11th hour rallying call. We'll see what the attendance is today. It was 28,000 for the same senior game, at least last year. Anyway, we'll see today. But Shane McGrath gets into it, as you can tell from the headline. He says there are reasons why the men's finals are the biggest and most important dates in the Irish sporting calendar. They're not new, and they're not rooted in misogyny or any other culture war trigger point. Malloy is entitled, if not obliged, to drum up support for Camogie's finals day, but in these comments he fell into the trap of equating support for a team to a moral duty. He says, this is a long-standing failure of some League of Ireland diehards. They'll soon be working themselves into high dudgeon with the return of the Premier League. So that bit of, it needs to be a bit more dimensional than just guilting people into going to the games.
Yeah, I think that's, we were chatting a little bit outside about this. I think that's a very short-sighted, you might get a knee-jerk reaction once off that, but if that is your marketing ploy for promoting your game, I don't think there's a great lifespan in it. I think, like, we have to acknowledge ladies sports, like, from a societal and cultural perspective, is coming from a different starting point to men's, and it's making strides. But ultimately, it's as he said, we watch it when it's good, not because it's good, because it's a quality. You know, you've got to give some people something to support about. And I'm going to go with a really good example from female sports with the Meath ladies and the last number of years. My wife's been involved with that team. I was going to National League games, I'd say as recent as 2018, played on the AstroTurf in Dungannon, where there's not even a proper viewing area, with a few parents and boyfriends and partners at the games. And that was it. And over a number of years, they went on a journey that just captured imagination, I think, nationally a little bit.
Yeah.
But certainly within Meath, like, you know, the miss is an intermediate into winning an intermediate, doing the unimaginable and going to, and they have developed a core fan base. Do they have as many people going to an average National League game as a men's team? No. But where is it versus where it was a number of years ago?
It's so much better.
It's a different world. I went down to Tullamore for their semi-final this year against Kerry, and, like, stopping in Apple Green, going to and from, and there's carloads of young girls with their parents going to watch the Meath ladies, because this has been normalised as a successful team to support, with, you know, traits and characteristics that supporters want to get behind. They're not going because the clubs rang the parents and said, listen, Jesus, it's bad form now if you don't bring the girls down to watch the Meath team. They're going because, and it's growing and growing, and there are challenges put in the way, obviously, in terms of maybe investment and funding and the whole integration piece, I think has a lot to answer for in terms of that as well. But you got to look at a sustainable way of getting supporters on board. I said that was sustainable, and that was done by a county board, a management team, and a group of players that have made that team worthy of support. And I know they'll be disappointed with last week, but they've had really big support this year, and they'll have big support again next year because they're consistently competing there. So, okay, that's on an individual team level, a one team level, but I think that's the model to go after. Similar to the Dublin ladies, yes, there's population, all this, but they've developed a fan base by being consistent, by being the team that stop this Cork domination and being consistently competitive for a number of years.
And they're out there telling their stories as well, is the thing. Like, you know, like, I mean, I don't know how much of that the Camogie Association and the sponsors, I'm sure they've done bits and bobs of it or whatever, but like, that's the, there's a much deeper bit there around the telling the stories of the teams and the players involved, and also the bit of like, growing the game, which hurling obviously faces as well. We're trying to grow the game beyond a core of 7 or 8 counties. I know they've introduced this, and he talks about it, Brian Malloy. He has a piece in the Sunday Independent today, a self-penned piece. And I kind of, to be honest, I'd expected a little bit more from it because, you know, there's been a lot of narrative during the week about the conversation we've just had where you say people must turn up. And I kind of thought, oh, well, maybe this is in response to that and it's going to kick it on a level. And to be honest, it kind of just repeats a lot of that from Brian Malloy. But, you know, to be fair to him, as I said, he doesn't. It's not that he doesn't raise a lot of interesting points and that they're not worth raising. Of course they are.
I think I'd probably fundamentally agree with that. The initial article you quoted there, it's
Shane McGrath's
piece. Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I don't think, like Shane said, it's sustainable. I think it's definitely improving though, right? And it's not like you can liken it to a ton of different sporting events. Like at the lower levels of professional sport, there's nobody watching as well, and you know I don't think you go guilting people into watching these things. I think over time and like you said, through storytelling and you know, personalizing the stars of these games more, I think that'll build in itself. These things take time. And it definitely has improved. Like if you look at attendance from, I don't have the exact data, but from a number of years ago to recently, I'd say it's definitely improved in ladies sport.
Yeah, it is growing, and there is the bit. Was it covered in this? It was. I'll briefly quote Brian Malloy's bit as well because it's the other context of this conversation about people who talk about the Scort conversation that happened. Well, if everybody who had an opinion about that turned up to the game, like that's not a comparison.
No.
It's not like it's it. Anyway. Each year, he writes here, there are four All-Ireland Sundays. Two are invariably sold out, two are not. That the two men's finals attract full houses while the women's equivalents do not should concern us all. If we're serious about achieving true quality in Gaelic games, then a deliberate and substantial overinvestment in the female games is required, not just financially, but also in infrastructure, visibility, time, energy and focus. It means all of us backing the women's games with the same commitment that is shown to the men's. During Scortgate, he says, we saw a groundswell of support from TDs and senators, commentators, sports stars, influencers and thousands of ordinary people. My message to all of you this weekend is simple. If you support Gaelic Games, go to the Camogie Finals. If you support women in sport, go to the Camogie Finals. If you're in a position of influence, use that platform to bring others with you. As I said, I'm not suggesting that Brian Malloy is not making some good points there. It just feels a little bit like this is a wee problem.
It's so generalised. Like I have two sisters both involved in high-level sport, and I'd have to ask them, but I don't think they'd all support equality in sport. They'd all support equality in women's sport, but I don't think any of them are going to the Camogie Final tomorrow or today. So it's so generalised that you can't drop a blanket statement and be like, if you support this, you have to go. It's personal interest. If people want to go, they'll go. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, and I think he raises some very important bits about the investment side of it, because to get that, I suppose, exposure and even to improve the conditions that our female counterparts in ladies football and Camogie are playing in, like that will improve their performance. That's quite simple. Like, so I completely agree with that. And again, as I said, that ultimately that's going to be integration piece. So I'd rather see him make a real push on integrating, because then all our funds are pooled, and just like a footballer or hurler in Meath, Kerry, Kilkenny, Waterford is entitled to the exact same supports, expenses, whatever else. Now our female counterparts will get that. As it stands, as separate organisations, they will not get it.
Mm.
So that's an area I'd be going after instead of, you know, talking about people filling the stands. Another kind of sub point that someone raised before was, given that the male and the female sports are in different, I suppose, stages of
progression.
Progression, yeah, life cycle even. I think there was a real trick missed by moving the calendar in line with the men's. Because like the men's weren't facing the same problem. They're going to fill out Croke Park for All Ireland finals, no problem.
Yeah.
If the women had kept even, say, an August or some other final date where you're not competing, like four finals back to back, there is an element of fatigue.
Absolutely.
In it. If they had just spaced that out slightly, and I know this split season causes loads of different trains of thought, but I think that's a no brainer for them. They could dominate the latter half of August. When people are kind of going, oh, geez, there's no more inter-county here. Okay, there's another 2 weekends to go after.
Yeah,
so I think there's practical measures like that rather than these impassioned pleas towards this is your moral duty. Like.